Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
What's up, hustlers? Welcome back. This is Andrew Morgans, founder of Marknology. Here is today's host of Startup Hustle, covering all things e-commerce, Amazon, startups, founder stuff, you name it. Before we get started, a shout out to our sponsor, Fullscale.io, helping you build software teams quickly and affordably. Today's a special day. It's our 100th episode, and really wanted to do something special for the moment, you know, the milestone. And today's guests are actually the women of Marknology. Veronica, Brooklyn, and Ro will be coming on the show. I just wanted to talk to them about joining me with Marknology, the early days, like kind of their intros to e-commerce, what they're doing now, and ultimately just give you a chance to meet, you know, the women behind Marknology and the ones that have helped me build everything we have. So we're going to start with Veronica. Veronica, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
So, okay. So we usually start out the episodes just, I want everyone to get to know the guests a little bit. And I know I talk about them a lot here on the show, but you guys really get to. V, I'm going to call her V for the rest of the show, mm-hmm. just because it's a lot easier. But V, let's talk about, you know, early days of working with me in Tampa.
Oh man, in Tampa.
Yeah.
Start.
What do you remember? Like, when, what was the first project maybe that, like, you know, was like, hey, this is Amazon. Can you help me?
Well, I can't really remember like the first project, but I kind of remember the feeling of being in the first project. And I basically, you know, I was in grad school, going to school for my master's in environmental engineering. Andrew was in Kansas City. I think he moved like a year earlier. So that's kind of like the distance of time. And he was just kind of like, hey, I need help. I have some projects I'm working on. I started the side hustle thing and it's kind of growing. I just need some help with some Excel docs. And so I felt like the first projects were me just like copying and pasting stuff. Like I didn't know what I was doing, why I was doing it. And it was just like, here, do this one thing. That was kind of like the first projects.
Yeah. I feel like I had no idea how to communicate instructions, like, virtually, you know, like from not right there with me. And
I mean, this was what, 8 years ago?
That's eight, no, eight, I think 9 years ago, yeah. or so. So I was wondering what year that was. I think we were in, you know, 2014, mm-hmm. 2015.
Definitely jumping on Zoom and FaceTime wasn't
a thing. No. And during that time when we were putting products up, it was really like people with tons of products just wanting to get products up, like, you know, different colors, different variations. They didn't have copy. The Khalids. Oh, how many products do you think we were putting up? It was thousands, right?
Thousands and thousands, yeah.
What was he selling?
He was selling blankets, I think. Sis might know a little bit more about that when she comes on, because I think that was one of her first projects, too, kind of that client kind of came.
I remember when we were billing for that, we felt so guilty or so like just stressed about, we were putting in hours and hours and hours of work, but we felt so bad being like, we need $500 or we need $1,000 for all this work.
Oh yeah. The amount that we charged then. Yeah. And we still felt like it was extravagant.
Okay. So early days of obviously being like an agency or consultant, but you were helping me. You were also working in a restaurant. I think you were finishing up school, even going through like a breakup. We had a lot going on. You know, when was the decision to like, I guess, leave Tampa and like kind of the engineering degree you were pursuing and figure out what this e-commerce thing was?
Well, I had been divorced for about a year and I was probably like in my last year of grad school. I've been working with Andrew for probably a year or two, kind of on the Amazon stuff. I was helping with two refugee groups at the time and working at a beach bar in Tampa. And I remember trying to figure out, okay, well, what were the next steps, you know, because environmental engineering for your master's, you're going to be like, that's your life. You know, I'm starting from the ground. I didn't have any connections. And, you know, the goal was always to go overseas. So I was doing all these things on the side and kind of like helping Drew start something. And I, you know, I got advice. I was stressed out. I was doing so much stuff. And Andrew actually, I'd like call him and I was just crying, which is rare. And I remember just being like, I can't keep up with these refugee groups and, you know, the everything all at the same time. Like, I don't know what to do. And Drew kind of gave me advice that was like, well, you can't help others until you help yourself first. And of course, you know, good advice never just sits with you in that 1 minute and you're like, aha, that's the good advice. You know, you kind of mule on it. I feel like good advice is kind of that stuff. You sit with it and you try to think through like, what is that? What does that actually mean? And that was just kind of like the, how I made my discussion, which was my decision to come to Kansas City was like, well, let's just give this a try. And so that's what we did. And here we are, I think 9 years later.
Yeah. August is 8 years.
Yeah. So that was kind of like the deciding factor. It was like, best decision of my life, being here with my family, and having been able to do the things that we've done so far. I couldn't have chosen it better. And there was not 1 minute of regret.
Have we been overseas a few times since then?
I mean, we've gotten to travel just a little. Just yeah. A few times here and there.
It was a crazy time because we were getting busy work. Like, you know, we had some big clients off of Upwork or not big at the, they seemed big at the time, yeah. But like big workload, no one really knew what to charge. So we were just winging it, you know, just like working on random projects, not really even knowing exactly what we were doing, but it was growing. And, you know, we just found ourselves kind of like, we left our jobs and we're getting paid to like help people on Amazon. I remember it was like, you remember the first year, I think before we had the office, just like randomly choosing coffee shop. Did we have the office already when you came?
So when I came to Kansas City, we already had the office. Okay. So it was actually like, we didn't have, I think it was, we were moving in. Like
okay.
The day that I got here, we were moving in. So we had that space, which was really cool to be going from Tampa where I was like in a very, very small placed my desk in the, you know, very small room with that. And so to be able to come here and do that, but it was still like very much, you know, ragtag days.
Yes.
We actually started our Airbnb business because of the ragtag days, because we didn't have enough money to pay me full time. And so we Airbnb'd my loft here in Kansas City for the very first one. And we made $10,000 that year to help supplement that first year of income that we couldn't necessarily bring me on at what we needed to.
It's easy to forget some of those things that we were doing.
9 years later, we own an Airbnb business with our bestie. So full circle there. But
yeah, I'm like, we need to go back through and maybe look at even calendars before they wipe them away or something and just see the dates and some of the stuff we were putting in there, you know, to remember the early stuff. But it's like, okay, so origin day is just like, saying, hey, F it, like, I'm going to try something new. I'm going to go. We're going to like, I think people look at us as a family business, even in some ways. And I think the reason why we've been able to be so successful is our why. Our why was pretty straightforward, which was just like, each one of us was like, I'm trying to get my life together and, you know, live a life intentionally and improve quality of life. And at the same time, like take care of my people while I'm doing it. And I think at least for me, and I think it resonates across the rest of us, is like we had a low somewhere around in there, like in our own personal lives, whether it was a divorce or a breakup or a sickness or different things. And it was like, first, like, get that in order. And then, you know, saw that we were onto something. I think that's what it was, is like, we were like, we're onto something. Don't know exactly how to scale a business or grow it, but we're onto something that's working. And I think if we just like stay with it, you know, we can do some like really cool things and create some cool things.
Yeah. I see, like, you know, they always have those like, you know, Instagram sayings, but like this one is so true, the consistency over time. And like, when you look back at the beginning to where we are now, it wasn't some big monumental, something went viral, no one's paying attention. People still aren't paying attention to us, you know, but like, it's not, it's consistency over time that's brought us. I 100% believe that's where we are now. You know, I started off being sitting next to you and being like, I don't know one single thing about what we're doing. And you're like, me neither, basically. Like, it's just like, figure it out, kind of, you know, we sat there together, kind of pushing each other to figure it out. And here we are 9+ years later. And I'm like, aha, like, I actually now feel like I know what I'm doing. It's like, it took that long, that many years of 60+ hours to actually finally feel like, oh, I actually do know what I'm saying, not I'm making it up.
Yeah. Like, honestly, like 10,000, 15,000, 20,000 hours each on this platform. I think something that we brought up the other day, we were just like reminiscing, and to our listeners, like, me and my sisters grew up in Africa, and V, who's on the show with me right now, we used to have this little like computer bunker that our dad let us have. It was like in the basement. We set up like all our computers, and late at night, like when no one was on the satellites in Africa, we'd be like, you know, torrenting software or videos or TV shows or games. And it was hard. It was like complicated back then. We're talking like year 2000, 99, 2000, 2001, torrenting stuff. And it was just me and you just geeking out about, you know, tech stuff. And then it was like, you know, then we came back to the US and it was years later. I mean, before we kind of got back into computer stuff, like, we left it behind because we had all this American culture and society and rules to learn. But, you know, it's so cool to be back. Like, start that way and then be back doing the same stuff.
It's nerd stuff, you know. Like, I feel like I kind of like hit me again this year. I'm talking with other people, but it's like the things that we do or that we figured out that's not like cool and fluffy is the nerd stuff. It's like that sitting and figuring and tinkering things, and, you know, getting online and figuring out most of the things that people don't talk about.
Yeah, you're right. I think I've been tinkering a little bit myself with, you know, some of the selling strategies and marketing strategies lately, and was reminded a little bit when I set up the warehouse, but like, I really enjoy some of that, like the gamification of it, mm-hmm. the figuring out the algorithms, like how to optimize this, how to get better. And we're in that phase in our business right now where we're doing those things internally, like on our business, mm-hmm. not just for others. And it's bringing some of that nostalgia back
a
little.
We tell that with our clients all the time, you know. I'm like, this is a game, you know. I'm like, we're trying to win the game for you guys, you know. Like, that is how we see it. It's like, business is a game. Like, can you stay in the game? You know, that's the hardest part, right?
Saying in the game of business, like, can you be in the game to play the game?
Exactly. Yeah. And like, everything that you do is part of like winning the game ultimately. And so that makes it, I think, relates back to what you're saying about when we were younger, but like, that's the fun of it. It's like, and if you can gamify aspects of it, it makes it more fun than just feeling like a job.
No, totally. I want to switch gears just a little bit and talk kind of about, we talked about, you know, you joining early, and I mean, we've gone through countless, I mean, it's 8 years, right? So went from me and you to me, you, and Ro, to me, you, and Ro and Brooke, to I think our team is at 36 right now. So and honestly, that's, you're a big part of that, not just obviously across everything, but our creative department has really just grown a lot. I'd like to talk about, because I feel like what we do at Marknology in regards to bringing in a full service Amazon account management, like business strategy, ads, and blending that with creative and storytelling and branding is something that we're unique for. And you've been a big part of creating that department really from scratch to where we are today. Can we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, the name of Marknology is blending marketing and technology together, right? And so it plays just directly into like how we set up the company. As people who are artists in different ways, But then also we talked about that e-com like nerd side. And it's like, how do you blend both? And, you know, I think that's one thing that people get frustrated about, like tech companies who don't focus on like the creative agency, is like they don't understand the creative and the creatives don't understand the nerds. But like at Marknology, we have both on our team and we're trying to figure out a way, you know, to blend and make that. So that's really been fun. You know, naturally, we didn't study anything, you know, creative or the arts, but it's definitely part of who we are as individuals. It comes out, a lot of people say, like in the way we dress or in how we present ourselves. So trying to figure out how to blend those two together in an Amazon agency where no one's talking about branding, you know, for they are now, they're kind of starting to, but even some of the cool features that Amazon's bringing out, they're still not talking about them at conferences.
Right.
You know, because, you know, I feel like a lot of the Amazon agencies up until this point where money has started kind of coming in and COVID, you know, they were for the nerds. You know, they weren't for these, they were for these people who could figure out how to make lots of money on the platform. And they didn't need that creative side. They had figured out the algorithm, the tech part. They figured out that. And now that, you know, the world in general is, and Amazon is focusing towards that creative, we're kind of like, you have to figure out how the two blend together. Yeah. So, I mean, it's changed over the years. I think like how we started our creatives, especially with how Amazon is changing it, it's forced us to kind of level up. But it's really fun to be able to take, because Amazon and branding and stuff is so new, it's like you kind of have, it's like the Wild Wild West. And so you can try a whole bunch of things. Yeah. You can make your own way. There aren't, you know, all these other successful ways that have already worked. Like you're forging areas that no one's talking about in branding. Even people who are going to school are not talking about it. And so that is kind of a perfect environment for me. It's, as we're people, ragtag people, like we,
there's no way, there's no one saying this is the best way to do it or this is the only way to do it because no one's done it before. So because of that, it's almost like this level of confidence of just like, there's no way of like questioning, am I doing this right? Because there is no necessarily like
right way.
Yeah,
exactly.
What's, you know, what are some things like one that didn't work? Like when we were trying to create the creative team and just like, you know, like work with brands to get their story out of them. What have been some things that like we've tried that didn't work?
Well, having designers that can't execute, I guess, at your vision level, I think that's important to have people who can understand what you're trying to say as a leader.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean someone else couldn't get, you know, what out of them that they needed. But, you know, for me, I think that was one important thing. I think it was also kind of a contradicting a little bit what you're saying about, like, there's no way, so no one can, like, judge the way. That is true. But I think, like, at some point, we were trying to kind of do maybe what we thought like other creative agencies did and realized like that didn't work for us. It's like, this is a fast paced environment, meaning like this long thought out design work. It can't happen on the Amazon platform. You won't, no one's going to hire you and it's not needed. Like that level of like, you know, logo design where every single aspect is taken up and put into account, that it is needed in some aspects, right? Landlocked logo, it's awesome. But on the Amazon platform in general, 90% of what we're branding needs to be done quickly and it needs to be telling a story. You need to be answering the questions through the imagery. So trying to use an old school model of like doing it this like long and very intentional way was costing us.
Yeah.
We couldn't get it out quick enough. People's probably, you know, so we came up to a lot of issues with there. And then once we find out our own way, which is like, okay, this works for us, let's lean into that. So I think a little bit of backpacking, a little bit on trying to do things how other people did it, but then realizing that Amazon's not the same as those websites where it's static. You know, things have to be changing. It has to be done quickly and still look professionally and be up to like branding standards. So trying to mix both, I think.
No, I think you're right. One thing that I was thinking of was, you know, like whenever you move into a new area that you don't know, you know, you're taking in information. So you're listening to podcasts, you're reading StoryBand books, you're reading like branding books, you're reading all this kind of stuff to try to get better. And it's one of those situations that's like, take the good and then put it through like what you're doing and leave the rest, you know? And so it was, we were trying to do it like, okay, let's read about it. How should we do it? And then it was a combination of that. Like, so we need to repurpose it. What's best for like a full service agency and Amazon. And then also it was like the brands that we were working with, right? The difference in what they call Amazon sellers or FBA sellers, and then a brand or then a manufacturer or brands that have invested thousands and thousands into branding have no real difficulty understanding kind of what we're trying to communicate versus a seller that has never really put aside you know, thousands of dollars a year just for marketing or branding or image enhancements, or they come and they say, hey, I have 1,000 SKUs. What can you do, you know, for all 1,000? And it's just like, that doesn't work like that, you know? And so having to like almost like fail with them to then know what to tell, you know, brands and manufacturers that were listening right. Like, you know, we tried this shortcut. We tried doing it like template work, or we tried outsourcing to get it cheaper and saw that we weren't getting the best results. Those are all things that came to mind.
So good. It's like the failure part, I think, is a great way to say it, is like, as someone who now is a CMO of Martinology, like if you would ask me, like, I failed so many times in the last 9 years because I, you know, but what the quickest thing I think that we're really good at doing is pivoting as leaders, like understanding that, okay, like we can fail. Now we fix it. We fail and fix it. Now all of a sudden we've had so many failures and fixes. Like my pool of knowledge to pull from now is so extensive. Like we've worked with over 300 plus brands. That, you know how much experience that is. And if you're using those failures, you're not scared of them. Yeah, you underquoted. Now you have to make the project up. You overquoted, and now you're trying to deliver like good quality. Those failures as a leader make it now that I have a wide breadth of knowledge to pull from. And no, it's still not perfect, but there's a lot more there, and I can quickly pivot instead of taking so long to pivot.
Yeah, and I think one thing is just like try, come back to it in a year, come back to it in 6 months, and be like, wow, we've learned a lot in the last 6 months, the last year. Let's go back. But like, you know, you still have to get those repetitions out to be learning anything. Whenever I'm talking to people like in the sales conversation or just here on the podcast, I reference like the sponge listing, right? That brand we worked with out of New York with the sponge. Mm-hmm. And I think we had like, I mean, I can be corrected, but it was between a 45 and like a 48% conversion rate for like several years. Yes. Running. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't a lot of PPC. There wasn't like, you know, we obviously got the keywords right, and they had a good story that we brought to life in the A+ page. And then the listing had the story and the photos. So like the photos and the video were like educational about the product. And then the A+ was like story about the ladies that created the brand. And I feel like we just got it right. And it was something that like whenever I saw the data from the creative, basically, like a lot of people say like, well, it's this unknown. It's kind of like we don't know if it's going to work, if it's not going to work. Well, a conversion rate like that tells me it's working. Mm-hmm. Right. And I just remember like it wasn't that I loved everything we did with that page, or I loved the branding, or I loved the creative personally, but customers on Amazon definitely loved it. And seeing that just made me like even more dive in and focus and be like, okay, this creative stuff, this storytelling stuff on Amazon is like the way to go. If we can recreate this like over and over and over, you know, we're going to be extremely successful. Like that was one that I definitely hang my hat on as being like, that was like a light bulb moment for me.
It's also super fun to be able to take this kind of like making it go a different direction in this conversation, but it's also like really cool to be able to work with like really small brands and give them big brand vibes.
Yeah.
I think that is like really cool too, is like, cause that wasn't really there. It wasn't available before for them, but because we've kind of made our own model, we can make it afford, we've made it so that they can have, you know, kind of that big brand vibe too. And that's really fun to do.
Something else I'm going to share, I think, and I don't want to give away all of our secrets, right? Okay. I'm going to leave some for us. You got to come, you got to hire us. But I think a turning point for us too was when we got designers in-house at Martinology that spent their 40 hours a week plus just designing for Amazon, instead of like freelancing or hiring out a great designer from somewhere else that like might come in and do an A+ page or do a brand guide for us or a label for us or like specifically what we taught them. But think about the difference in like getting to do that every so often, and then that's like what you do every day and getting better at it.
I mean,
so
that
like
was everything.
I think that was absolutely the, I mean, as far as quality and the next level for us was getting designers in-house that actually are being paid to focus on Amazon instead of it just being like a project for them. I think that was a big game changer.
Yeah, that was everything, especially as a leader who is still learning with her staff, I think, as like we're kind of in an industry that is also learning at all times. Like there's new things coming out all the time that everyone's learning together. So having designers in-house that you could work with those ideas back and forth really changed the game for us, as we were able to like, well, what about this? You know, can you try this really quick?
Without it costing us a ton.
Yeah.
Well, you know, because they were on payroll, but the difference in
hours
paying a freelancer versus someone in-house.
Yeah. that was crucial to our success now.
To being able to try. Yeah. Okay. So like, let's wrap up the next few minutes together. Like, what are some projects you're working on right now that have you excited?
Projects that I'm working on right now that have me excited. Just really digging into, you know, it's exciting and hard. I will say that. I don't want to say just like exciting as in meaning like, oh yeah, but I mean, it's really difficult in growing a team in the creative space. Understanding like how much time is given to designers and staff and branding strategists to focus on the brand and give them that space, and then know when to bring the next person in. Like, when are they overwhelmed with work, and when should you bring the next person in, and then what should that next person be? And so I think that part of growing a creative team right now is exciting, but also it's challenging because, you know, you're trying to get the most from your people, but you're also at the same time, you understand that the creative isn't just like another job where you can just, you know, you have to have that space and that downtime to be creative and to think of those ideas. So how do you plan that into someone's, you know, schedule, and then to know when to bring that next, okay, well, now is the time to bring a next designer in or a next branding strategist. So I think that's something that's exciting.
Okay. And then on the counter side of that, like, what's something that you would say out there to potential clients? Like, be honest, like as honest as you want, potential clients, partners, people working with us, people thinking about working with designers. What's something that's making, like, you know, creative and branding and stories, making your job hard? As an agency owner, as a founder, like, you know, working with brands to bring their stories to life, what's something that's been a real challenge?
Yeah, so I think in the e-com agency especially is, you know, brands aren't always like content first or brand voice first. They're kind of like, a lot of people are bringing a company, like a product to market. And then we're kind of telling them about like, hey, you guys need branding. Like, no one understands what you're saying from this listing. And so I think budget reasons, because if someone has, you know, 100 listings, now all of those 100 have no branding, and we come in saying like, hey guys,
you need to do all of this.
Like, they don't have the money set aside. And then, so I think that's it, is like how much it costs to actually make branding, even with us like trying to make it as like affordable as we can. That is like, it's hard. It's hard to be creative in a limited sphere. In one instance, it's made us great at what we do. But in the other, I think that's, yeah, it's super challenging.
So to that brand, continuing on that, to those brands that maybe have a small budget but want to get started, you know, what's a tip or a piece of advice? Like, you know, where should they start? Yeah.
So one thing we do for our clients who maybe can't afford their whole catalog is we do a one set price where we kind of make the template for you. So we do all the hard lifting with this one listing. We talk about your branding. We talk about your storytelling. So we're really getting the template, I'd say like 75% maybe of what you'd need across 100 listings. And then we even say like, hey, you can take this and go find someone cheaper who can execute this same template model. Because most designers can take, you know, something that's already built out and kind of modify it across the product line. And so, you know, I mean, yeah, that's not us money in our pocket, but it is a way for us to help you as a brand kind of take that idea and find. So if you can find someone cheaper than us, then, you know, great. So that's a tip that I would take, is have someone do a template of one about someone that you like, of all your lists. So five product detail page listings and an A+, and have them quote you for that. And then you can take that and send it to a designer that you think might be able to execute it at a cheaper price.
Cool. I love it. Thanks, V. Love you. Thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, so exciting.
And helping me celebrate 100. Episode 100. Next up, we have Ro, I believe like employee number 3, technically, although you were volunteering hours much before you got hired.
Yeah, technically.
Ro, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Ro, also been with me since the absolute beginning. I think we first got you involved with social media. Is that kind of how you started helping with photography at the beginning?
Yeah, we have a brand called Landlocked, which I'm sure Drew has talked about. And he had an old partner who was running the account. And I was like, this doesn't really feel like our vibe. And so I was like, Drew, let me do socials. And he's like, I don't know.
I'm just like, oh, this is a battle either way. This is going to be a battle either way.
Yeah, I was like, no, just like, I'll do it for free. Let me do it. We'll make it better. And so he finally said yes. And so I just like started running with it. And then I had been doing photography forever since I was in high school, and then I went to college for something else and then moved to Florida, and V and I started shooting when I moved there, and I was doing like portrait stuff, and then they got into the business and V is like, okay, so we're running into this problem with the company. Everyone needs photos. She's like, I know you don't know how to do it, but can you do it? And I was like, I'll try. And so I remember the first product, and if anyone does photography out here, they'll know, was a white shampoo bottle, and shooting white on white is hell. And so I think I spent like, multiple days of hours and hours of time trying to get this white shampoo bottle on white background. And I know I like taught myself everything. And I look back now and I've learned all like the tricks. And the way I was doing it was like so the wrong way. It was like the long, long way. So yeah.
Not the wrong way, just the self-teaching way.
Yes. It's like my own method. But I learned. So then I came to the company doing like projects for photography as needed. So we were like getting more and more clients, and we started doing all these white backgrounds, and then went into lifestyle. And then one day I was working at an investment banking company downtown, which is like, I am a creative in my soul. And so it was like the opposite of who I was. But you know, you have to work. And she just was one day, she's like, hey, I have a job for you. It's not exactly the creative job that you want, but it will bring you in. And I was like, I'm in. I was so nervous.
Yeah, I know. I know. You're the first to like leave a job, I feel like.
Yeah. So like she brought me on as a project manager, and I'm so thankful for that because I wasn't in that role for super long, but I got to learn everything about Amazon.
True. I almost forgot that.
And how everything works. And so when I did transition into that like primarily creative, like storytelling role, I was able to be like, I understand why it has to be like this in order to be successful, not just in a creative way, but like, what's the reason behind it? And I wouldn't have been able to do that if I didn't have that beginning like project management learning stage.
I almost forget about like some of our evolution in regards to like how it came to be. But you know, we weren't getting paid. Well, one, we didn't have like, we need our own media company to produce content for Marknology. But we weren't really getting paid for creative. So it was like for every creative person we were trying to get in the business, it was like we needed them to do something else because that's what clients are paying us for, even though we wanted to explore in these other areas.
And Brooke needed so much help. I don't know if I was that much help with like, I remember with copyright editing. That's not my jam. You know, some we have strengths and weaknesses. And it would take me forever. I'm like, Brooke, this is not. So she laughs. I'm like, I was good at other things though.
We had everyone doing end of month reports. Yeah. Like at one, I mean, we're skipping along a little bit, but I think at one point we had 5 or 6 people in the same room.
Yeah, in the first office. Wall had a desk.
Every wall had a desk, and we were growing, and then we just had everyone doing everything.
It was fun, though.
But if anyone knows why we look good on social media, or our branding looks good, or our photos look good, or why my Instagram looks so good, it's all Ro. So.
Yeah, I do my best.
Yeah, she got a baby that's like way cuter than the rest of us, and so we're all struggling now to get great photos.
That's not
But we don't mind because it's baby Jet.
But yeah, so after I did project management, I did that for a while, and then we just kept running into this like content and storytelling thing, like over and over again. And so my attention just kept getting pulled and pulled to that, like, okay, how do we create a listing? Like, how do we story tell that? And it became like my main focus. And V and I built the creative department from that. We're like, this needs its own category. Like, it's not a project manager, can't necessarily do this. It takes a lot of time and brain space and focus. So I did that for years.
I think your first teammates were from Northland Caps.
Yeah.
Right,
our
design interns. I'm thinking of the young guys, like, in the old office. Like, we had a picture of them, and I'm just like, I think they were kind of doing like social media or like.
Well, a lot of the people that work with us now, we have brought in as interns from different either college interns or even some high school interns, because no one really knows what we're doing anyways. Like, I always say that, like, they, you know, and Andrew, like, they don't teach us in college. And if they do, they're 5 years behind.
Yep.
So we brought in a lot of interns just throughout the years, and they were great, and we brought them on. So it was like helping with social media and the creative department. And it was like those people. And now they're like staples in our company.
When you're going to school, you went to school for, I think, psychology.
Yeah.
And then you're in banking, we're figuring it out, right? You weren't planning on being in banking. You were in Florida. And then it was like, hey, Vern's moving, like, and you're like, okay, I'm not being left behind. I'm coming with.
Well, yeah, I studied photography in high school, and this goes to like mentors and teachers. I had a teacher, like, I was like obsessed with photography, and I was like, I want to be a photography teacher. Like, I thought she was so cool. And she's like, you're not good enough. And so it changed the direction of my life, because I went to school. I've always loved, like, I'm a sensitive person. I've always loved helping people. So I was like, I'm going to do psychology. I did that, and I graduated, and I was like, I don't want it. Like, the only way to succeed in this is like going, like getting your master's, your doctorate. And it just didn't feel right for me. And I lived in Kansas City my whole life. And so I was like, my family is in Florida. Like, I'm going to move and just figure it out to try to live somewhere else.
It was basically me, guys. I'll just put it out that way. You know, I had a divorce as well, and just life came crashing down. And, so I moved back to Kansas City, and then you and V were in Tampa. And then you guys were like, well, Drew needs our help. We're moving back. And then,
oh yeah, V's like, hey, we're visiting Kansas City, and she was about to graduate. We've been talking, like, where are we going to move? Are we going to go to Washington, D.C.? Like, because we're best friends, and we're like, hey, we're gonna do this like adventure together. And then I'm young, in my 20s, I'm never going back to Kansas City. And we're at Kansas City visiting for Christmas or something. She's like, bro, we're moving back.
I think I had made my pitch. I made my official pitch. I was just like, I need you girls back. Like, I needed you. I needed you back. And something I learned, like, I think I live not 7 years away from you, but 7 years from Vern, away from Vern and Brooke. Mm-hmm. Just through the years, through college and band-aids and going through a divorce and like coming out on the other side, I was just like, I don't want to spend any more time without my people, you know? And so I know we've been to Thailand together. Like, you know, we haven't had as many trips as we should have, but Italy. Yeah. We've done some stuff, you know, that for our family, like legacy and stuff is pretty unique and rare. But okay. Bringing us back. Just thinking about just like how that exactly unfolded was kind of just crazy, because we really were just like, there was no one out there doing this Amazon thing. So we were kind of having to validate ourselves, like, that this is a thing. Okay, you're leaving your job to do this. Okay, you're leaving your career to do this. Okay, now you're doing something you've never done before. And we didn't have the studio like we have it now. We didn't have the cameras and the lights and the white rooms and the different color backgrounds and, like, you know, thousands of hours of experience. We were doing it with, like, I don't know, homemade white boxes, you know?
Like, yes. And I know, like, I just had FOMO, and I was like, I want in with my best friends, whatever it is, like, I'll figure it out. And so when V was like, let's do this, I was like, okay. Like, I don't know what it is. I was like, but I'll learn it.
Yeah. And there's a part of us that was like, oh my God, do you think we can all work together? Cause we had never done that before, to the listeners. Like, hadn't done that, but we were just like, why not try? Mm-hmm. And I remember, speaking of just like figuring stuff out the hard way, editing white backgrounds. Remember when we found the service that was like 50 cents or something? It was a dollar to like clear up white backgrounds, and our lives changed. Like, just like, it was like thousands of hours saved.
I knew this is like embarrassing to anyone who does any creative work, but we were doing like pack sizes for this company that had like hundreds of products, and I was like, okay, in order to do pack sizes, I have to shoot every pack size, and really you can just Photoshop them in minutes. So I did so much extra work, and then when I figured it out, I was like, I have like 20,000 cases of product for no reason, but it's fine. It worked out.
Yeah, it's fine. I didn't mind paying you for it. So it is what it is. But no, I think we're from dairy farmers. Like, you know, we're from like workhorses. We're a blue collar family in some ways, like at least in our origins. And, you know, it's how we figure stuff out. I do feel like that's why we're the best at what we do, is because we've done all the hard stuff when it comes to Amazon, not just Photoshop. I just mean like the spreadsheets and the photos. And it's like, we know 2 + 2 = 4. And now we can use the calculators and just like, you know, really understanding. I remember even just like, everything out there looks like China and fake. And so we need like real photos. It was like, you know, and for a while it was like, we were taking real photos, real lifestyles. And then like, you know, doing graphics to them. Now it's almost evolved a little bit more to be more graphic design and, you know, that kind of base. But even learning through that just taught us so much as a team.
Yeah, we're like, we have to get faster. But it is cool. It's like, I really figured out beyond photography, the love of storytelling. And that's like said, like the heart of our company. I think a lot of people, you know, they're like, hey, we want to make money. We want, you know, to do all these things, we're gonna be successful. And it's like, but without the storytelling piece, it's like a failure. Like we always say, like the ads won't work if you don't have the content and the storytelling. And I fell in love with that. It's like just with being like, okay, how can we bring this product to life and tell the customer exactly what we want them to know and how? And it was a process, but it's very, very fulfilling. And then really being like, branding is so important. Consistency. And like when you're looking at products from a company and you go from product to product, to have that familiar feel and the quality, and it really takes it to the next level.
I think something else I was thinking about was just like kind of how backwards our family upbringing was. And like, just, you know, we were raised apostolic. We like, you know, the long dresses, the uncut hair, no tattoos, no piercings. Anyone that knows, like, you know, apostolic Pentecostal. When we were kids. And so in a way, it's like we've evolved to be even more outspoken, like, you know, like the piercings or the tattoos or the haircuts or the purple hair or the braids or like, you know, whatever we're trying. And like that expression part matters like just a lot to us as individuals on this team. Right. Like just being able to express and then being able to find work. I think for me, like I was a traveling musician. Like I thought I was going to be in a band. I gave it 150%. I had a line in the sand, but it was like, I was all in. And I was learning like album art and like how to create with others and t-shirts and how to book a tour and how to sell once you're there and how to perform and create this performance that's packaged. And that's like telling a story of who we are as band members. And like, you know, I was really learning that stuff. And when I let that go, I felt like, well, that's my creative outlet. Like, I think most of us, like, that first thing that's, like, a creative outlet for us is the one that we're just, like, that's our thing. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was music. For you, it was photos. I mean, I know you love singing and all those things, too, like me. But, but like, you know, like, the because we grew up in church. Like, you know, we might as well be Katy Perry, but we're not. No, but, like, you know, for me, it was music. For you, it was photography. And now we're doing so much different things. You're, like, helping me create PR packages and websites and product packaging and product development and all these other ways that we are like creative. And like for me, commerce is like, oh my God, I didn't really realize that I actually just like being creative and that there's a whole bunch of things I can do to fill that.
Yeah, it's very full circle. And yeah, I started with photography and then I realized there's like so much more. It's like, and even beyond Amazon and creating on the platform, it's like, how do we tie in social media? How do we tie in websites, email marketing? And all of it goes together to make a package. It's a lot of work, but it's cool to see it like, oh, I'm sending out a Marknology email. And if you see that email, you go to our website, you have the same feeling, the same credibility. It seems professional. I mean, we are professional, but it just like brings us to that next level. And that builds like brand trust, like all kinds of things that goes beyond just like a pretty graphic or a pretty photo.
No, I think I was bought in early. Even I tell the story, but me and Vern went to like a real estate conference. We were just trying to learn how to invest in real estate. We took like, it was like a 2-day weekend crash course, you know. And I remember the speaker was so impactful, like almost had us in tears. He was talking about his brother and his why and all this stuff. You know, we're emotional. He's doing a good job. We were looped in. Like we were like, it's a boring real estate conversation, really, but like we're hooked. And I was like obsessed. I started looking him up on social media and he had no social presence or anything. And I remember coming back and being like, making just like this little promise that's like, I'm not going to be successful and like have no personal branding, no branding. And that's when we went all in.
Yeah. And that's how I feel like even now, like we're starting to dive in a little bit into TikTok and like looking at ads at TikTok, and then you go to the page and there's no content. It like takes away from the trust. You think it's a scam. You think, you know, it's a foreign seller. Like, is it the shipping going to be 3 months? Like it, all those questions goes into the consumer's brain. So when you even just do like the base level of content, it gives you all those questions are gone. They're like, oh, this is a legitimate brand. This is what they're about. This is what they're doing. And you bring it in. And so that goes like it's from been from the beginning, like Instagram and Facebook, and now to TikTok. It's like you have to do it, even if it's the bare minimum.
Yep.
It's like what
it's like. It's authenticity piece. You know?
Yeah, we say like no branding is bad branding. It's like if you have nothing, even if it's like, you know, sometimes like get the job done, it's not perfect. But if you have nothing, then you have bad branding and it's bad for your brand.
I was remembering like when we were just trying to figure out this authenticity piece, right? So it's like, you know, Amazon sellers are like afraid of China's pricing. Like, oh my God, China sellers are just like knocking off my products. Like we can't compete. And these different challenges we had where we were like, we just have a quality product, like X-Torch, for example, is a higher priced product, but it was like one that gave back, like did, it had mission focus behind it. And we had a higher price point. We were just like, okay, let's do amazing branding. Not just like in that simple context of branding, but it was like, okay, if we're going to sell this higher price item, like we have to really like level up. And from like the personal brand looks to like the results, like I was talking about with the sponge listing and seeing the results there, or like simply like, okay, when we take a photo, if I post on social media, like it started with social media, right? And it was like, I post on social media and if it's just me, I get a lot of likes. Or if it's just a picture of my house, I don't get as many likes. Or if it's a picture of me and my mom or baby Jet, I get a lot of likes. Mm-hmm. And like the analytics behind seeing people engage with it, I think first with us, it started on social and then we took that to Amazon.
Yeah.
Like, cause there wasn't that direct, like, okay, see all of your data and your results. Amazon wasn't telling us that, but it was like, if this works for social media, how can it not work on Amazon?
That's how I kind of applied this like brand story strategy to our Amazon sellers. It's like we have these brands and some of them have really amazing stories and people buy into stories and they'll pay a higher price for a story. So like, you know, you have like the Instagram people and they have all these followers because they like have this like family story or a pet story or something that brings in and people are like, okay, I'm going to invest in them because I care about their story. And so they'll even pay a higher price because they're like, oh, this is a small business. This is a woman owned business. And so putting that in the strategy of the graphics, we created this thing called like a brand story graphic, and you just give them a little bit of information. So when they are going to your listing, they can tell the difference between a China seller or a foreign seller and be like, okay, yeah, this is priced a little bit more, but I know why, and I'm going to give that to them. So, and that is something that I've seen is like made improvements to where people are worried about that. It's like, okay, well, why would they pay $2 more? Like, let's tell them why.
Yeah. And it started like with social, it was about likes or it was about like just look and appearance and branding. And like, it wasn't really tied to monetization. But when we took those kind of like those learnings that we spent thousands of hours with on social media, and then we took that to Amazon, it was like, oh wow, you know, like things like PickFu came out, and you know, then A/B testing on Amazon and different stuff like that, where we could actually test some of the things we were trying, or we would, you know, make changes to a brand and see just like conversion rates rise and be like, oh my gosh, this is really cool. And when you start like getting success with that, I know for me, and I think you'll resonate to this too, is, we started wanting to only work with brands or sellers that had something that we could bring to life. Like,
yeah.
You know, you can't just bring a story out of nothing. And so it was like, okay, now we've seen what happens when you have a good story.
And it cares about telling their story too.
Yeah.
So you have to have those people who are like, the branding and the creatives and the content are important. Just like the looking at the amount of money you can make with one image versus six. It's like the data is here, even if it's not perfect, if we put this here, you'll have more success. And like having people who care about that. because not everyone, some people are just like, that's not important to me. I don't want to spend the money, or they don't understand that the upfront cost of creatives is an investment and it always pays you back.
Right. It always pays you back. Like we should make that a clip because, you know, it is an investment that's like, yeah, once you've invested in it, it's not to say that you're done, but it is something that's like a fixed cost in some ways. And it's like, once it's done, you're good. Like you've got your black suit or your gray suit, and you're able to wear that like for formal occasions for a long time. You've invested in a nice suit, you know? And I think that that's kind of how I feel with photography and branding. And now, like, to even take it to the next level where, like, the aggregators and the roll-ups and everyone's trying to buy companies specifically on Amazon. And then you look and you're like, what are the requirements that they're looking for? They're like, well, we're looking for a package brand, right? Like, and it's like, duh. Well, that's what we've been working on because we see that those results matter.
They know that, too. They're like, if this brand has no images, we're going to have to do all of that. And it's not going to be the success that we want.
Exactly. It's a big risen cost. Okay. So from, you know, when you joined the team to creating the creative department, had baby Jet.
Yes.
Right. And now you're back working in a new role with me more closely and something that we've needed. Let's talk about that a little bit and why, like, you know, I mean, I can say why I'm excited about it and, like, you know, what we're trying to do. But this is a show by founders for founders. So I think that there's other teams out there that listen and tune in. It's not just like customers, right? It's people trying to run their own teams. Why have we made kind of our special forces team?
Well, I think that, you know, we always talk about like working on your brand and in your brand or your company. It's like you output all the time, but if you're not doing, like Brooke will talk about how she's working on systems, right? If you don't work on the in your brand and like developing that, you get behind and you lose. And so we're working on taking our branding and how we present ourselves to the next level. You know, it's like when you're working on everyone else's brand, your brand kind of gets lost. You're busy. There's only so many hours in a day, and you want your clients to be successful. So I transitioned to focusing just on how we can make our brand and how we present the best possible.
Yeah. So to our listeners out there, like, it's a special role. We're definitely like trying to innovate ourselves. And, you know, we do a lot of branding and marketing consulting and strategy for other brands. But like every team, you're like, okay, well, so-and-so is busy on this and so-and-so is busy on this. And okay, but where are we going to put that in the queue and how do we execute? Well, in order to stay fast and I think relevant and do a much more focused job, we've got Ro heading up like basically special projects along with a designer and a writer to kind of create this 3-woman team. Yes.
They're amazing.
Yeah, like 3-woman team that can just move quick. So whether it's like slides for a presentation, whether it's our email marketing, whether it's like new, because we're working on a lot of brands and products ourselves, building our own brand. So, you know, the product development piece of the aesthetics and how does this look? And it's something that we're in year 8. It's something that I've wished I've had for 9 years. And we're only in business 8, but it's just like, it's something that we never seem to be able to allocate for. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to make a huge difference.
I think it's awesome too, because we're diving back into social. It's like, I kind of feel like I started there and now I'm back there with a lot of other things, but we are so busy, you know, we're not creating content. We have so many things to say. We have, you know, tips and, you know, we've done so much and we have no space to tell it because we've just been too busy. It's like, you can't, if you're working a million hours on your clients, you don't have time to create the content that's needed to express that. So focusing on like making platform specific content and videos and, you know, our PR stuff and all of that, it's been super fun because it's been down the pipeline for so long. It's like, we're finally here.
Yeah.
We can finally say like, we've been just like hoarding all of this information for so long. And then to be able to like put it out there.
Yeah. For me, it's like, it's exciting because we're getting to practice what we preach, yeah. Right? And we get to do it for others. But now we're able to do the same things that we're telling brands they need to be doing, which is like, you know, we're creating content on the podcast, we're creating content at speaking events, like we're creating content for all these brands, but a lot of it's proprietary and it's not stuff we get to share with everyone. So it's a specifically different task to create it to show the world. Mm-hmm. And I know like when we were smaller, we got opportunities to do that, like on YouTube and different things we were doing, you know, before we scaled and tripled in size, I think in the last couple of years. So it's fun to be doing that. And I know that it's something that I'm specifically excited about, to have like a dedicated thought to our story. And it's something that's unique to the Marknology family. Is like, we just have a very unique story as people, as siblings, as family, as like a company out of Kansas City, as storytellers, that we're unique in that way. And so we started in a small way, being able to tell that story, but being able to dig in is going to be really fun. And some of the projects we're getting to work on seem like, you know, really top tier projects. I don't want to share it with everyone, you know, but it's like, I think they're going to be really cool.
Stay tuned. Follow us.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm always one of the ones that overshares. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to like keep some of this to ourselves so that we can release it.
It is going
to
be fun. I know we tell our clients all the time just about that full circle marketing and having that same experience from place to place, and to actually be able to do that whenever, because we get so many compliments on our website when clients like go and look at our team. And I am excited to have that to the next level, even to like really showcase our work, because we do amazing work. And we're just sometimes a little bit too busy to share it. And now that's the goal. It's like, I want the world to see like we're doing things that are super innovative. And it's something that you should be watching.
Yeah, no, watch us work, right? Watch us work. That's our slogan. Okay, so one thing I think that was really cool just thinking about this is like, one thing I'm proud of us for as a team is like the flexibility or the open-mindedness of like switching roles. And like, you know, we've had Austin that started in social media, and now he's like running the account manager. And like, even Brooklyn and Veronica switching roles, even me, we've just had like you switch roles multiple times.
Yeah.
You know, we just have this like kind of like, where am I needed mindset and mentality, but also what do I like to do and what do I enjoy to do? And I think that that's something I'm giving to anyone listening, is like, it's okay to be like, I started here, I invested time, I invested years here. But like, whenever you step out of it a little bit, you're like, oh, being an account manager at the beginning taught me this. Oh, being in social media taught me this. Okay, creating story and brand created me this. Okay, I'm back to social media. How do I bring those things all together? And it's hard. Like, it's almost that like, what got me here won't get me there when you're switching, but really it comes full circle.
Yeah, I think I've had the most jobs.
Yeah. Since the beginning. The most versatile MVP, 100%. And I was thinking of this funny story just to tell on Ro a little bit. Like, she loves animals. And we have a brand that we have equity in. Mm-hmm. Waggedy is one of our brands. It's been with us, I think we've been building it for over 6 years. Mm-hmm. And working with Ben Bellinson, a favorite client and friend of ours. But we did a rebrand. We used to be the Institute of Pet Nutrition, and then we rebranded to Waggedy to be younger and more fun and more engaging. And I think we also made the move to go from like stock photos to like real animals. We were trying to be more authentic and more like engaging, and really all it was like a reason for Ro to just hang out with animals all the time.
I've probably photographed 100 dogs.
Yes. So like, just in the office, we're always like, oh, a puppy, oh, a golden doodle, oh, a Doberman, oh, a pit bull, oh, like a retriever. Like, we've turned into not an animal shelter, but we definitely, I was like, I think Ro played me on that one. I'm not really sure.
We've moved on from that too. I do say, like, if you want to have like an ever-changing photography career, get into product photography, because one day you'll be shooting a shampoo, the next day you'll be shooting a dog. Like, your life is an oyster.
Adult toys, like, yeah. You know, faith-based products. Like, we keep it interesting over here.
Anything and everything, and you have to make it work.
Awesome. Well, coming up on our time, I want to do the same thing kind of, and like, you know, what's one thing that, you know, you're working on outside of like maybe a specific project of one of our products or something that you're working on that you're excited about?
There's so many things that I'm excited about. I will say, just like we talked about this a little bit before, but creating the content that's very platform specific and learning from that and being able to bring our story to life. I'm just so passionate about our story. I think it's an amazing story and it needs to be shared, and we haven't had that chance. So to be able to dig in, one, it's fun for me because it's, you know, doing things like you love for other clients is another thing, but then you're like doing it with all the passion and love that you have for the company. Being able to share that, it's amazing. I'm basically diving into everything, like our baby.
Yeah.
And then being able to like, oh, look at it.
Yeah.
Amazing it is.
Like, what good timing. Too.
Yes. So.
Okay. And just for fun, like, you know, what's been one thing, you know, being with us, like, I don't know, it's been forever, 6-7 years. I don't know. How long have you been with us?
I mean, we moved.
Even part-time.
We moved back in the beginning of 2016.
So 6 years?
Yeah.
Okay. So 6 years, you know, people trying to like evolve and work in their business and things like that. What's one thing you'd share to maybe someone that's not, they're not where we're at, where we're able to have a small team working on this. What's one thing you would share with them to like get started telling their own story?
I think just even though sometimes it's hectic and busy, is to take the time. And I know that V and I would like do like a weekend hang or something. And we'd be like, okay, let's talk about content for us. And like really putting that time, like definitely is not to the level now and it wasn't perfect, but it was getting done and we would strategize. And it was like, to us, it was like basically a hang. But just to like take that a little extra time, even though it feels very overwhelming, because it has such a great reward. I also would just say is like, even when things seem tough or you don't understand like the full picture, just to keep going. And that my life motto is everything always works out, and that's because you put in the hard work, and it takes time, but just keep going and it will be awesome.
Thanks, Ro.
Yeah,
love you.
Love you.
Shout out to our sponsor for today's episode, Making 100 Possible. Fullscale.io, helping you build software teams quickly and affordably. Last but not least, we have Brooklyn joining. We're going to get into her story, like her joining the team, what she's working on, and what she's got for you guys is going to be great. Last but not least, my youngest sister, Brooklyn Joe. Welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. Happy to be here.
So I'm always talking, anyone listening just hears me talk about my sisters. I rarely clarify which one I'm talking about, or, you know, I just tell stories. But Brooklyn is absolutely pivotal at our team. Has helped us scale really the account team virtually and here in Kansas City, and is working hand in hand with me right now on some of the things that have been put to the side, that in the business stuff, like scaling and processing. So we're going to get into her story first and then jump into kind of what's new and fun and exciting as an agency, not just as Amazon consultants, but as an agency, what we're working on. Brooklyn, haven't had you, you don't do a lot of content, so I'm excited to have you on here and just get people to know you. What year did you come and join Marknology? Do you remember?
It would have been about 6 years ago. So 2016 as a copywriter.
You were working with horses. You were working in a stable at the time. You were serving, you were working on a video game project, I think at the time, several years.
I was also freelance SEO writing with Upwork.
Okay, yeah. So I remember we had that combo because that was how I got my start on Marknology. And I was like, hey, this is a great way to have some side work. I think you're working for a couple of question magazines.
They were super cool and a fun time, but did not pay well.
Yeah, did not. It was not about paying well. It was like using, like finding something that you liked and, you know, trying to find a side hustle. Did you start with us like specifically writing? Was it SEO?
Yeah, I started with that same giant client that Veronica did, Khalid, doing stickers and decals and mugs for firefighters, Marines.
Oh, right. Okay, it's coming back to me.
Yeah, and so we had those giant spreadsheets, and we wanted specific SEO for every single listing. So every listing got modified to have a couple of keywords in it, and I would just do it in bulk.
Yeah, so to people that don't remember, like these days are just like, it was a different time on Amazon. It was about getting like massive amounts of product up. But we were not just doing the giveaways and things like that that were kind of popular at the time. We were really trying to push keywords and do it in mass. So, you know, we would research firefighter mugs or gifts for firefighters or things like that, pick those keywords up, and we're writing listings by the thousands, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. Cross-referencing and copy-pasting, depending on if it was a mug or a firefighter, and we got it done somehow.
Okay, so did you, like, just be as honest as you want to be? Like, was it really about just, like, you know, getting a chance to work with me and V, or was it, like, you kind of were, like, getting into e-commerce at that time? I'm not sure we've ever even had this conversation.
Why did I do it?
Yeah.
Well, basically, I really needed the money, and I didn't want to tell you guys. So I, you know, of course, was just wanted to work with you guys and see what you were doing. But anything I could do to get my foot in the door of writing, which is what I thought my career path was going to be.
It's a lot different than that now.
Yeah. Well, it turns out we can hire other people to write. We can't hire other people to do what I do.
Correct. So let's talk about some of that, because, you know, really you've become like one of our lead strategists here in regards to brand strategy and what brands are doing on Amazon and what they need to be thinking about and bringing all the data together. And, you know, it's changed a lot from when there was four of us to a team of 36, and, you know, running that at scale. The thing that always comes to mind with me was XArt. Yeah. Right.
That was a big pivotal move for me when you finally handed over the reins to that account. And, they got to see me as a professional and not just like as one of your assistants.
Yeah. And it was, you're never one of my assistants, but, you know, I think whenever you're like trying to start something, a lot of people just see the founder and they're like, okay, I want Andrew on it, or Andrew's got to be involved, or, and when I was doing the most, what I knew is that I wasn't the best person for the job. Like, I was, you know, they're going to be better off with someone that was dedicated to it. But to me, when I think about us scaling and kind of what your focus has been on for years is like helping us scale the team, was we had like 200 listings a spring, I think, like with A-plus pages that we were launching on a schedule. And we had never done anything of that size, like intentionally.
Right. We wanted them to be launched quickly and correctly and to really be able to take off from an ads perspective as soon as they got inventory. Which required a lot of coordination and a lot of spreadsheets.
Yeah, so we went from the photography part to the, which we were doing because we were doing their social media and everything. So we were doing their photography for the new listings, to the SEO for the listings, to the A-plus pages for the listings.
Creating variations.
And then eventually the Salsify integration. Yes. That was a big, big play. When we brought Salsify on board, but then also then being ready with PPC. And then also the trickiness to this one was that it was an outdoor brand. And so the seasonality was short. So like while you have like a quick ramp up, you also had a quick ramp down. And that was just, it really brought in every single department of our business into one brand all at the same time. And it had to be coordinated well to execute. And I feel like that was really the starting point of us having a scaled oiled machine. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the team, you know, knew what they were doing, but they definitely needed someone who could communicate with all sides. And after being kind of a fly on the wall watching you and Veronica do that, I just was able to communicate with the team extremely effectively and keeping the ship moving on all different parts, not only with XArt, but with the other 40 brands that we were managing at the time.
So you started with like writing, but like what I know of you is like, you've built your own gaming computer, like, you know, you're involved in code, like all that kind of stuff in your personal time, like had cared about like tech and computers and gaming and stuff like that. And then like with work was writing, but there's a big part to Amazon and selling on Amazon that I feel like is gamification, right? And the way that the algorithm works and that kind of stuff. At what point did you start seeing it more like that than just like, I mean, a side hustle or like individual parts?
Probably day one, to be honest, because I would get those projects from you guys and I would just turn on the timer and see how many listings I could get done. And every day I would keep track and try and get more and more done to become more efficient just right from the get-go.
What I can say, speaking for like Veronica and Ro, probably is like the three of us, I feel like we tend to be more on the creative side. Like just like we're creative, like we are more like, not more imaginative or whatever, but just like our little sister was the one always organizing her room, like always creating like colored templates and like the tabs on the folders and like making everything organized. And for us, adding you to the team was just like that secret sauce that we really needed to bring, where we can still be creative and do our thing, but then we had someone thinking about system and process and like, how can we scale this thing? And I think a lot of companies, they might start with that and that might be their thing, and they struggle to get creative, or creative teams that struggle to get organized to be able to scale. And for us, it just so happens that we're siblings. But definitely getting you on the team transferred quickly from just like writing and being like a second to me on template files, because I think the template files became a really, really big part of everything we did, from the SEO to organizing it to working with remote teams to, you can solve a lot of problems with flat files.
If you know how to use them.
Right. And I think that was really the first thing that we got good at. Was the flat files.
Yeah. They don't work as well. They work a lot better now than they used to, I'll say 4 or 5 years ago. You used to have to do a ton of troubleshooting. And me and Veronica would just sit next to each other and I would read her off errors and we would just keep resubmitting until we got it figured out, because, you know, we couldn't have our clients having errors. Like, it was our professionalism on the table and we were experts and we had to figure it out even if Amazon's system was broken.
Right. Like, how many times, guys, like, how many times did we like, oh, we uploaded the wrong file, or we crossed, like, something happened in our CSVs, like, mixed and the data's off, or the UPCs, like,
yeah,
switched up. Like, I mean, whether that's our fault or a mistake or it just happens, I remember hours and hours and hours being spent fixing stuff.
Not knowing that if you upload a UPC with a template file, Amazon can kick you out a new ASIN. Or knowing that you need to submit the UPC in certain circumstances instead of the ASIN because the Amazon system just didn't work correctly, caused massive issues. Now that we learned how to fix those, it makes everything else now seem easy.
I remember one time in the early days where I think it was a CSV, like tab delimited, and all my UPCs like concatenated. So it was like, you know, the original numbers, and at the end it just all went to like zeros because it like wiped them out. And so I went from having like this massive upload file to like all of my UPCs being just washed,
ruined.
And if you know anything about Amazon, you know that once you've listed a product with a UPC, like you can't switch it, and just absolute catastrophe. If you're not organized and like, okay, so then you have somebody else uploading a file and someone makes a change and someone's uploading a file, and it might seem silly, but if you're trying to run a team where you're working on, you know, 40 or 50 projects at the same time, all with different files, it became a huge undertaking for us.
We had to have systems and we needed them fast.
Okay. So that's, I really was setting us up to talk about what we're doing today. I think we've been in 6 months involved with Escala. I'll give them a plug on the show. Yoni and their team is just absolutely amazing out of Israel. I think they're Israel based, Tel Aviv, but I know they're back and forth all the time. So, Escala is a team that essentially comes in, helps you like sits down with your team, business consultants, and help you create systems and process. And it's not something that's just hands off easy button. It's definitely something that's been a ton of heavy lifting on our side as well. But something that I feel like we've all believed has been like super important. I feel like we're getting close to the finish line.
Yeah.
What do you feel like it's going to do for us? Let's just talk about that process in general. Like, what do you feel like it's going to do for us as we go forward?
So Escala is to us, I think what Martinology is to a lot of clients, is a guiding hand and just an extra pair of ears. I can't sit down with every one of our 30 members of staff and isolate what they do for 40 hours a week and write that down and make it look good. Escala is built to understand people's processes and find ways to improve that over time. So they've been interviewing our staff, you know, hours and hours and hours, one by one, every single thing that they do, which isn't the same thing every week, documenting it and basically isolating our proprietary systems.
Okay, so we're making a couple outside of Escala, and some of these recommendations came from that, but we're doing a ton of overhauling from trying to find, you know, SaaS companies, trying to find, you know, software that essentially fills our need as an agency that's growing. And what comes to mind is, again, that cliche saying of like, what got us here won't get us there. And we're having to upgrade our project management software. We're having to upgrade our account management software, our reporting software, all the way down to our SOPs, you know, from warehousing and our fulfillment center to our ads team to international expansion, you name it. A lot of heavy lift, but it feels like one of those things that's like slow rocket ship.
Right. Well, a lot of it I don't really want to release into the team until it's absolutely ready to go. I spend a lot of time vetting softwares and trying to break them and just making sure that they're rock solid before I present them to the team or to our clients.
Yeah.
Since technology is such an important part of Martinology, it really needs to be the best of the best.
Yeah. And I think that what people don't understand is, like, whenever you're learning a new software, like if every one of our clients had a different software, two or three or four that we're having to touch, that's like a big learning curve for us to have to be able to learn and onboard a new software and know everything about it to the point of being able to solve problems with it. And so just making sure that if we're there solving problems, we have the best tools. And I think we spend a lot of money and even more so in time between, if me and you vet it, and then, you know, think about even if just 30 team members spend 2 to 3 hours learning a software, like, you know, we've spent almost 100 hours on a new software. And so how important it is to vet it and make sure it works before we're handing it over.
Martinology beta tests a lot of software, not because we like finding stuff that's new, but just because Amazon is still such a new space, new software is getting released all the time.
Right.
And we always want to try and find the best of the best.
Or we are, like, innovating too much that we break it.
Yeah.
In some ways.
Well, they make promises, so we have to.
Yeah. And then we find its limitations and, you know, we move on. I'm excited, honestly, about so much of the innovation in software, because there hasn't been a lot of software made for agencies managing multiple brands. It's been more so for that Amazon seller that's managing one account and what they're doing. And so, whether it's drop-down features, the ability to switch between them, the ability to connect multiple accounts, like all those things that come into play with an agency play versus that Amazon seller, I find, like, finding those efficiencies and those optimizations to be a lot of fun. But it's not really what I saw when I thought about scaling my company. It wasn't right where I thought I would spend my time.
Yeah, well, I think I get that from our dad, because I am just constantly looking for efficiencies and ways to save the team time. You know, if we've got 30 people and I can save each of them a day or an hour a week, like, that adds up a lot.
Yeah. Oh, it's like an investment, right? Like we were talking about with creative, you're investing, like, it's a one-time investment that can pay off forever.
Yeah. When you think about, like, sometimes I walk into a grocery store and I'll see, like, those little sign that's like, make sure you put 4 items in a bag to save 2 cents. You know, it's like those big chains are doing all of these little things to save pennies. And we've got to apply the same principles to our team in bulk.
Yeah, no, like, I was just demoing Smart Scout, just to, like, bring an example to the listeners. Like, I was demoing Smart Scout. It's Scott Needham's software and his podcast, The Smartest Seller. If you guys tune into him, you should check him out. And the software has a feature where if you put your product packaging in, and you can connect to your API and everything, but if you're kind of like a Gatita tool that helps you with refunds, but this one is instead to say, hey, if you shave off 1/4 of an inch here and 1/4 of an inch here on your packaging, you can save $1.25. And it tells you, like, what to change to get to the next tier of price savings. And when you've been doing this just as long as we have, like, you know, for me, 11 plus years, you start to realize that a couple cents here, a couple cents here, 5% here, 2% here, you add all of that up and it's like a ton of savings, not just across an Amazon brand, but then add that to an agency. And it's stuff you're doing. You know, I think that there is a sin here, if I can say that, for lack of a better word, that is trying to over-optimize and over-systemize anything to where you lose the ability to be creative and innovative because you're just so stuck in your systems. But I think you still have to be fast. And I think we are light years away from being that optimized that we are stuck in our ways. But it is something where I see agencies or teams get super efficient, let's say outsourcing, and they just have SOPs in place and templates in place and team members in place that do that. And they're just kicking out work that feels very templatized instead of having that kind of human approach. So for us, it's trying to find that perfect blend.
It's kind of why Escala is so great, is they're coming in with a completely different perspective than what we do and are able to, you know, show us things we might be missing that I had never even considered.
You don't know what you don't know.
Little things like, you know, making sure you have team values written down. And there's just so much to cover so quickly when you're growing a business like this, that it, you know, I think outside audits are hugely important to growth when you get systemized.
Right. And I think even more so when we are even more buttoned up, getting that outside audit or that outside consultant will be even more valuable because it will be a lot more buttoned up for them to then see those differences. And I mean, I know we have so far to go because there's so many different departments you can get better in, but just the, for us, like the momentum I think we feel as a team by intentionally in all of these areas working, you know, intentionally working on optimization of our systems and process or our teams or our branding or our marketing is everything you need as a founder to feel like we're moving the right direction.
Our team really supports it too. They're always excited and on board with me with all of my new adventures that I take them on.
Okay, let's talk about maybe a tool that we're using outside of Escala, like something you found that like a software or a systems or a process that we've put in place or that we've discovered that's like just a fun one.
Okay. Well, I don't really want to give anything away.
Okay.
But we have found a new software that we're currently beta testing right now. They've reached an internal limitation. So that's one of the reasons why we have to beta test is you don't know they're going to have trouble until you get into the thick of it. But so far, it's already saved the team probably 30 hours or so in the last week.
Wow, that's incredible. I didn't know that.
It's unbelievable.
Okay, well, someone's getting a raise. No, just kidding. No, like these are the things that like I've been obsessing about in regards to like, what are our KPIs as teams? Like at our mid-management level, you know, from ads to account team, to creative team, to SEO team, to, you know, the brand protection team or the case management team, the case logs teams, like what are our KPIs? How do we manage the brands internally that we're managing? And then how do we manage our own teams? And there hasn't been really like software that existed for that. So it was something we had to build ourselves, right? Whether it was like reporting tools for clients or, you know, different things like that, where we're combining spreadsheets and making our own end of month reports and our own trackers. And now being able to find really because of, in my opinion, the appearance of aggregators in our space that have brought a bunch of money to these software companies and made it like a blue ocean for them to like create product and sell it, is now then bringing those tools to us. But ones that like, so we can spend some time, we can spend more time on the things that like we're truly passionate about as a team and less time just gathering data.
Yeah. I will plug in ClickUp, which is a software that we're working towards later this year into integrating. And its automated dashboard systems really give you incredible visibility, not only into your specific team, but into your clients' goals as well. We are manually keeping track of all of our clients' goals now and their individual KPIs. And that really drives the team's own KPIs.
Yeah.
If they're meeting my clients' goals, I don't really care if, you know, they're spending 45 minutes on a project.
Yeah, no. That's so good. And something I've been thinking about, I went to a leadership thing this week. Just, they had a speaker. He was a decorated Air Force pilot that, you know, fought in multiple wars and like has written a book. He's a colonel, survived cancer. And he was just talking about how KPIs, like people chasing KPIs. I know we get frustrated with clients that are focused on their own KPIs all the time. Mm-hmm. But just having a KPI, just because you're hitting a KPI doesn't really mean anything in the wrong perspective.
Right.
Right. And so how do we determine what are the right KPIs? What is our perspective? What are we going after? What's the why behind the KPIs? I think some people can get so tied up in just like, this is a KPI we have to focus on. This is a KPI we have to focus on, instead of getting the big picture of what's the immediate strategy that we're going for.
It really does vary client to client. And that's what part of what makes Marknology so special is I allow every single client to come to me with their own goals. And a lot of times after talking to me and Veronica for a couple of months, they decide to change those KPIs and focus on what really matters to them and to their team. So it's different if you're talking to the CEO or if you're talking to an account manager of a brand.
True.
So you've got to be flexible. And at the end of the day, we're here to serve. So if those are the KPIs you want to focus on, that's what we'll focus on. But we will also advise you in other areas as well to make sure that you have a healthy, well-rounded business.
Okay, let's switch gears just a little bit. I want to give you a chance to talk about something outside of our systems and process that's our obsession.
Okay.
You know, like the e-commerce, the Amazon landscape is changing a ton, right? We're in an economic depression for the most part. Supply chain is tough. Inflation's rising. Interest rates are rising. Businesses are selling left and right, rolling up. You know, as it gets harder, I know that me and you are of the mindset, like, we like a good challenge, you know, and so you're working with clients in the day to day, we're launching new brands, and we're still winning. We're still getting success, despite the difficulty. What's something you would say just to people listening and wondering, like, kind of almost a state of the union about just like what you're seeing as challenges out there right now, what brands are going through, mm-hmm. like just on the general, like as an Amazon seller, I share my like lay of the land all the time, but I'd love to just hear like some of your thoughts about what's going on right now, what you're seeing.
Yeah. I would say that brands need to stay flexible and mobile. As the economy changes, you need to be prepared to adjust your pricing, to raise it even, to send in shipments quicker, or maybe pivot and change the way that you're packaging things. We work with a client, I'll plug in West Drive, who recently innovated the way that they send an inventory by shrink wrapping everything to save on Amazon's poly wrapping fees that they had acquired due to previous sellers that they're working with. This is going to save them a ton. It's going to help them win the buy box, but they had to buy a huge machine, implement it into their warehouse, teach their staff how to use it. And they've got it up and running in about 60 days. And that's going to be a pivotal point in their business.
Yeah. Being able to pivot, being able to switch up what you're doing, but like not everybody can do that, right? So in some ways, it's why Marknology has focused on larger brands and manufacturers, even though that's not necessarily what we just love. Like I still love working with the smaller brands and bringing those stories to life. Okay, she's ready. She's ready. So like a manufacturer can make that change, and you have to have an owner that's willing to make it work. But there's honestly ways all across the board that you can be like changing or researching or pivoting into to be more successful. What's something else you got?
So I've got two. Just took me a second. So one is I'd like to talk about Unwasted. So she sells a fantastic product. It's a variety pack of 7 silicone lids that fits her product. She's been selling it successfully for years, runs a very well-run business, but doesn't have necessarily the funds in this economic climate to go purchase additional inventory.
Okay.
So instead, she's taking that 7 pack and breaking it down and putting all the different sizes together to make additional pack sizes with the inventory that she already has on hand.
I love it.
This has allowed her to expand her catalog 7x to offer 7 additional products without having to purchase any additional inventory, which she can then wait 6 months or so and repurchase again in bulk.
Smart.
I'd say like Thornell, for instance, is a brand that we work with, has been changing their strategy kind of back and forth, trying to figure out what works best for them in the moment. We're expanding internationally. You know, we've dropped Vendor Central and some other partners to focus solely on growing the brand. They've redone photography. They've basically taken their brand and completely flipped it and are exceeding their goals almost too rapidly. Which is can also be a common issue.
Yeah, and let's talk to the details of that. So, like, you know, basically they were selling through resellers,
correct?
Right, through Vendor Central or 1P Retail, Amazon Retail. We were brought on to help them bring their brand to life, their story to life, as well as go direct in 3P, mm-hmm. Which is a completely different business model. You know, what you don't realize is like if a brand is getting paid up front for POs, pallet in, pallet out, and then they switch to doing several hundred thousand in sales, like direct sales through like a Seller Central or a third party, they're now fronting all that inventory instead of getting paid up front. So lots of challenges, but more margin, mm-hmm. as they're selling at directly at retail. We're able to control map pricing, and able to see like what the customers are actually searching to make purchases. And is it brand searches and top of funnel, or is it keyword driven searches? And you know, one thing about Unwasted that came to mind, you mentioned international expansion with Thornell, and we're doing well there as well. But like, if you have limited inventory, you can't go out and buy more, you have overstock. What's another play you can make, you know, to increase revenues with the same product you've already bought? Well, international expansion.
Everyone needs to sell in Canada, basically.
Yeah, everyone needs to sell in Canada as the easy lift. But honestly, Amazon Australia, Amazon Europe, all great plays, just plays that take 6 to 9 months to 12 months to develop. You know, you can get launched quicker than that, but I mean, like, before it starts becoming a real revenue stream.
But is a year or two really a long time to wait for an entirely new international business?
No. We just are used to moving really fast. But you know, if you start planning that out, like a country a year, even as a brand that's like, I don't know what's going to be our next greatest product. Okay, well, if you have a great product now, where else can we be selling that? You know, I think about some of the other things like Chewy.com, Walmart. Not that all of these are like major lifts for everyone, but for the right products can be ways to pivot in this time as well.
Defensively as well. You may not know that you need to be there until you've checked out the market. And you can protect yourself from damage down the line by just taking those really early, easy steps now.
What is one thing, and I have something that I'm thinking of, but like with all the brands we're working with right now, and the things holding us back or growing the accounts, there's rising prices, there's competition, there's, you know, CPC costs rising by 50%, supply chain of those things. What do you think would be the most impactful, that sellers are on your side of the account calls, like what that sellers are struggling with?
Well, inventory is two commandments of the 10 commandments for a reason.
Yeah.
So I know that a lot of that is outside of their control, whether it's manufacturing or cost or not being able to get the right lids for your product. But I would say order now and order as much as you can.
Yeah, I think the winners, if they're not the manufacturers themselves, are figuring out ways to double down on inventory and finding ways to store it and finding ways to have it on hand. So when the supply chain starts hurting the smaller players along the way, they are secured. And so that might be, you know, tough on cash flow and a lot of money out of pocket, but it also just means that you're in it for the long run and you're going to be able to be there to stay.
Especially if you've got a shelf stable product that isn't facing expiry dates, like put it in your back bedroom. You know, you don't need a guest room, fill it with inventory instead.
I love it. We could go for days. I know she just deals with problems all day long with the accounts and solves them. So I just want to pick her brain a little bit and talk to some of what sellers are doing out there to stay creative, innovative, stay fast, stay ahead. We talked big brands and small brands in all of those examples. And there's things you can do. I think one thing that I love about our team is our ability to think guerrilla warfare when it comes to like strategy and just thinking outside the box, like, you know, taking a 7-pack and breaking it down to multiple offers or, you know, thinking about expanding internationally to find extra sales or, you know, launching in Australia to be with a seasonal product to be combating seasonality. You know, if you're a seller, if you're a brand, as the economy and everything gets tougher, you just have to be willing to do more and think more creatively and you know, try new things. Okay, so as we wrap up, what's one thing, you know, we talked about what you've been doing, we talked about supply chain, we talked about all those things, but if let's go back to the process combo, I just wanna end with that one. And what's one thing you would say to a team, it could be a team of two, a team of three, a team of four, it doesn't matter the size, but a team that's looking to start getting more process, more organized with their systems and process?
I'm obsessed with ClickUp. I know that we haven't fully integrated there yet, but you know, the more I look at it, the more that I realize that it's a dynamic system that is constantly being updated and is built for, you know, the solo entrepreneur, or if you have a team of hundreds. You can run multiple businesses out of it. It starts off free, and there's a YouTube video for pretty much everything. So, I mean, I was just talking with Veronica a couple of days ago. They have a whole business plan for how to run graphic design out of ClickUp.
Wow.
You could do construction projects out of ClickUp. Just find a way to systemize your time and stop wasting time on all the little stuff.
I love it. And we're not sponsored by ClickUp, but you guys know where to find me if ClickUp does find this podcast, because that was a pretty good endorsement. You know, shout out again as we wrap up to our sponsor, Fullscale.io. helping build software teams quickly and affordably. It's been amazing being with you guys today with my 100th episode, being able to bring on the girls of Marknology and just get to introduce them to you guys a little bit. You know, I work with them every day and have for most of my life. So it's super excited to bring them to you guys and get to talk about some of the stuff we're working on internally, some of the stuff we're excited about, and just trying to give you some behind the scenes of, you know, what an Amazon agency is working on, what we think, what we're focused on, what we're trying to help brands with, how we're pivoting. So I hope you guys found some of this of value, and I'll see you next time, hustlers. Thanks again for your attention and tuning in.
Startup Hustle's brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. Like we do it, like we do it.
we do it like we do it.